It is Friday, June 14th, and it is hot in Omaha, Nebraska. We are going to talk a whole lot about the 2024 Men's College World Series on this episode. If you are a casual college baseball fan, well, buckle in. We're going to help you get beyond that casuality. We're also going to do the good, the bad, and the ugly. Is casuality a word? Who cares?
It is now.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Arbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who knows that Asher Roth's best song was I Love College Baseball. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and that song ages very poorly.
Yeah, yeah. I think that even at the time, I'm pretty sure that was a situation where it was like, boy, we're going to look back on this and be like, wow, this was on the radio a lot. That was also when we were listening to the radio. So that's maybe a little bit of a difference as well. I do love college baseball, Jake, and I am excited to talk about it in this episode. We did a little bit of Men's College World Series chatter at the end of Wednesday's show, but you are officially in Omaha, Nebraska, where it is, as you mentioned, probably pretty sticky out there. The summer, I think it is officially summer starting next week, but they ain't waiting around in Omaha, having done it the last few years. I know that Thursday workout day is as sticky as it gets. So how are you doing on this Friday morning? I am excited to talk about these eight teams left standing.
As my voice crawls back, you can hear my nose is stuffy. I am tired. I am weary. I am overwhelmed. But Jordan Schusterman, I am prepared. I am here. I am passionate, and I will play through the pain. There is a difference between being hurt and being injured. I don't know what it is, but I'm here to do a podcast. Now, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to kind of set the stage. You've been playing through a lot here and still have a lot more to play through over these next few weeks. I know I'm kind of taking it relatively easy staying at home, but the travel is picking up. We are heading to Arizona. And if you're warm now, get ready for 110 degrees next week in Phoenix. At least we'll have some air conditioning in Chase Field.
It's like when people climb Everest and they have to acclimate at base camp. I'm like in Omaha acclimating to 95 next week, 105 in Phoenix.
You're definitely going to be pulling out the it's a dry heat line a few times next week. I think you will be especially appreciating the dryness of the desert compared to whatever is happening in Nebraska. But Jake, yes, as you mentioned, we are going to talk about this Men's College World Series field because the games are beginning in just a few hours, I suppose. And I think our goal on this pod, because of course, we talk about college baseball in a few other places, you know, on D1 Baseball with our friend Stephen Schock. But this is, if you're listening to this and you're a Major League Baseball fan or just a very casual baseball fan, and maybe you haven't watched a college baseball game all year, but with these games being on national television and with these games being, you know, in theory, you know, some of the best college baseball teams left playing, we would like to help you acclimate and at least give you the opportunity to get interested over these next 2 weeks for these next final 2 weeks of Division I college baseball games.
These games will be on, whether you are at the gym or the airport or the bar.
Right.
They are on ESPN. They will be around. You will see some of it. And we would like you to understand a little bit more of what it is. So firstly, part of the reason Jordan and I love college baseball, besides the fact that I played it and Jordan, you know, was all around it, is there is a certain love that goes into the game. Yes, a lot of these players are going to go on and play professional baseball. Some of them are even getting paid now. And we will talk about that. But in the same way that college basketball is a big deal and college football is a big deal, college baseball has a similar dynamic compared to its professional counterpart. And from a style of play perspective, one of the issues I think maybe that people have with pro baseball, if I see a guy hit a grounder to third, like the play is over, right? Like I don't need to stay tuned. In college, the success rate for everything is lower. And that means volatility and chaos. Yeah. And that means entertainment. And this year is only even more about that because the offensive environment in college baseball this year is ridiculous. Yeah. There are tons of home runs, tons of offense. I'm writing a whole article about why, whether it's the bat, the ball, the strike zone, older, bigger players. But all you need to know is that if a team is up five runs, like in the seventh, that game is not.
Don't turn the game off.
Over.
Yes. And I think, too, especially that has kind of helped mitigate what in early days of the current field where this game is, where the College World Series is played at Charles Schwab Field, like what we like to refer to as the Chuck Box. This field, the dimensions are bigger than basically any college park, except for, I guess, Creighton, because they play their home games there. But for the most part, these are a much larger ballpark than what 99% of teams are playing in over the course of the college season, which in theory would allow to help pitchers. However, as we saw last year and even the year before, teams now can get the ball out of the yard. So the home run is still in play. The gaps are certainly bigger, which allows for some interesting, you know, defensive scenarios, but it has sort of balanced it out with the park factors.
Yeah. Now, the next thing I want to explain to people is the structure of this deal, right? So March Madness, which I think 99.9% of the people listening to the show know the structure of March Madness. So I don't feel like I need to explain that. March Madness, right? You have 64 teams that get into the postseason. Some of them are automatic bids that win their conferences. Some of them are at-large bids that get in on the basis of a season-long resume. Those 64 teams are then split up into 16 four-team regionals, right? A double elimination, little mini bracket that pops out 16 teams. Those teams are then paired up into groups of two, eight different groups of two. They play a three-game set. Those teams then move on to Omaha, the ones that win, eight teams left to the College World Series in Nebraska. And the way that the structure here works, it's basically two different groups of four play their own little mini tournament. The winners of each group meet in the middle for a three-game set to determine it all.
Yes. Okay.
Now, this particular season, what happened, we got two conferences have representatives here in Omaha, Nebraska, the ACC and the SEC, who are easily the two most powerful conferences in the sport. There's been a lot of interesting things going on in the world of college sports recently. The whole world is getting a little bit more top-heavy. And baseball is perhaps the truest example of that. And that is because in baseball, the Big Ten is very much not a factor as it is in football and in basketball. So we have four SEC teams, four ACC teams. Is it good for the sport? Who could say? But they are here.
Yeah. And, you know, it is reflective of a lot of the other just player movement. As we've seen, the portal has, of course, the transfer portal has, of course, impacted all college sports, but it has allowed...
Explain the transfer portal in terms of like
sure. So it used to be a little bit more complicated to transfer between Division I schools where there were rules needing you having to sit out a year, whatnot. That is essentially, for the purpose of this conversation, all gone away, which has allowed players to basically bounce between schools much more easily. And there are a lot of factors that go into that, and NIL is at least a part of it. I think in baseball, it is not necessarily as big of a deal as it is in other sports, but it is certainly a factor at the top end, particularly with schools in the SEC and whatnot. However, as you see with some teams like NC State, you have, you know, older grad transfers, or you saw with teams like Duke earlier in the tournament, where you get older players who are coming from the Ivy League that can't play the Ivy League anymore. The point is there's a lot of player movement in college baseball, just as we've seen in other college sports as well. And that creates an interesting dynamic. To some degree, I kind of hate it, not because the players shouldn't have the opportunity to go wherever they want, but one of the things I do like about college sports, and one of the things I really like about women's college sports in particular, because they are staying there for 4 years, is the continuity and getting to kind of get attached to certain players that you know are going to be in one place for at least three, certainly 4 years. Now, the portal has certainly impacted, you know, women's college basketball and college softball as well, but being able to get attached to the players who have been there since they were freshmen is a cool part of college sports, in my opinion, and there's been a little bit less of that. However, you know, if you look at the teams that we're going to talk about today, there are players that have been there for 3, 4, 5 years in some cases, and those stories certainly resonate in terms of getting attached to certain characters in this tournament.
And then in terms of the money, like, there are players being paid six figures to change schools, right? That is happening.
That's a small number of players in baseball, but it is happening.
Yeah. There are, I would say, like, over 50K. Like,
that's it's definitely six figures, tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah, but yes.
There's money changing hands, and like, it's a significant development in the sport. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big picture. One other thing to know about the transfer portal is it means that they're just a bunch of old dudes.
Sure.
Right? Like, there are players who are like 24 playing in the College World Series. These are not kids. These are men.
Now, this is in theory one of the last years we'll have some version of that, because, you know, there are some players who got that extra COVID year and maybe had another redshirt year whose college career started in 2020 or before 2020, and so they've had this eligibility extended. We'll have fewer and fewer 23 and 24-year-olds in college baseball and college sports moving forward, but this year there are still some old lads playing college sports against, for example, I'm jumping ahead here, North Carolina's best pitcher, Jason DeCaro, is a freshman who enrolled early, who just turned 18 a couple months ago. So I would assume that Jason DeCaro is one of the youngest pitchers to ever who expected to start a game in Omaha. So that's kind of an interesting storyline for me. But there are a lot of these rosters that if you're old, listen, even if you're transferring in from maybe a mid-major, if you've played 200 college baseball games at whatever level, you're going to be pretty experienced and you're going to be prepared to succeed suddenly in the ACC or the SEC because you've just seen enough pitches. And there are a lot of examples of that across these rosters.
All right, let's go through the eight teams that are here in Omaha, Nebraska. The University of North Carolina Tar Heels, the University of Virginia Cavaliers, University of Tennessee Volunteers, the Florida State Seminoles, the Kentucky Wildcats, the NC State Wolfpack, the Texas A&M Aggies, and the Florida Gators.
Yes. So our goal with this preview is essentially, if you have not watched college baseball all season, and as Jake said, you're at a restaurant or you're at the gym and you see the game on and you see one of these teams on, here is the most basic thing that you need to know and why you could, in theory, be compelled to get invested in these eight teams. We're going to try to keep it as simple as possible.
What's the vibe? Couple players to know. Impress your friends. And let's begin with UNC, the University of North Carolina Tar Heels. How did they get here? What's important to know is they beat the defending national champions. So they knocked off the LSU Tigers in the regional. LSU obviously did not have Paul Skeens, who you now all know. They did not have Dylan Cruz.
Sure could have used him.
Dylan Cruz, who was the number two overall pick last year by the Nats, he also obviously is not there anymore. LSU was a slightly diminished version of himself. Still very impressive from UNC to knock them off.
Yeah. And I would say that while we mentioned that we will not have, you know, a repeat champion and we have not had back-to-back champions at the Division I level since South Carolina in 2010 and 2011, last year's field, we had Florida, Virginia, and Tennessee were in the College World Series. So we have three repeat, participants from last year, but of course a lot of fresh blood. Otherwise, North Carolina is one of those teams. This was a team that was just really, really, really steady all year long in the ACC. And the player to know with them is Vance Honeycutt. Their center fielder, Vance Honeycutt. Now, the first thing is his name is Vance Honeycutt. And when Vance Honeycutt kind of got a lot of attention as a freshman, who was not super highly regarded as a high school player, but immediately it was, you watched him for 10 games as a freshman. You were like, who is this guy? And his name is Vance Honeycutt. It's possible if his name was Joe Smith, whenever I make this comparison, Joe Smith is just catching strays. Joe Smith pitched like 800 games in the big leagues, right?
So from a weird arm slot.
So Joe Smith was anything but a Joe Smith. However, if this guy's name was Joe Smith, or Kevin, you know, Johnson, right? I know there's other Kevin Johnsons. It might have taken a little bit longer for him to kind of catch on. But Vance Honeycutt, you hear that name and you're like, well, that's someone that I need to know. And indeed he is.
He is going to be a first-round pick this year. He's a very fascinating pro prospect because he swings and misses a lot in the strike zone. The college level, that's not as big of a deal because the pitching is not as good. And his athleticism compared to the college players just stands out.
Yeah.
To an outrageous degree.
Field jumps off the screen. It's just an electric physical presence in center field. He is one of the best center field defenders that we've seen in college baseball in some time. And he's got real juice. He had a few monster home runs during the postseason already. And as far as star power in this College World Series field, he's probably number two, I would say, or at least in the top three or four alongside Jack Caglione, who we'll get to later with Florida.
UNC behind Vance Honeycutt. The one other guy I want people to know is Anthony D'Onofrio, who this is his fourth school. So he played D3 baseball at SUNY Cortland. Then he went to Stony Brook, where he did not make the team. Then he went to Quinnipiac, where he played. And now he's at the University of North Carolina. I believe Anthony D'Onofrio is 23. Hmm. It is hilarious.
He turns 24 in a couple weeks. So
yeah, I was overwhelmed going to one college. I could only imagine what it was like to go to four schools. What a thing. Absolutely delightful. On the mound, UNC, you mentioned Jason DeCaro. I mean, he's just turned 18. Like, that's crazy. Super tall, very projectable, great breaking ball. If you see a UNC game and he's pitching, you'd be like, that guy's a freaking light pole. That guy is a string bee.
Yep, skinny lad. He will be a first-round pick in a few years. But for now, he is an 18-year-old trying to help UNC win a national championship.
Last thing about UNC, they have never won. So they have never won the national championship. They have been to the College World Series. This is their 12th time in Omaha. They have zero titles. And that is a theme of this field.
Yes. So let's move on then. We'll keep it speedy here and move on to the next team that we will talk about. And that is UVA. And UVA has won a national championship. In fact, they have been in Omaha a lot recently, and they won it as recently as 2015. They are the most recent ACC team to win a national championship.
They are the only ACC team to win a national championship.
They are the only ACC team to win a national championship. Thank you. That is a good point. And obviously, with four teams in Omaha this year, there is a decent chance that we will be getting a second. Perhaps it will be UVA again. So if you're a casual baseball fan, you're like, oh yeah, Virginia's there again. Okay, so what's the big deal about this team? The basic premise with them is they have just a ridiculous position player group. Their offense, and of course they've produced a number of first round picks or high draft picks recently, most notably the Geloff brothers, Zach and Jake. Zach, of course, in the big leagues with the A's now, Jake in the minors with the Dodgers. Kyle Teal, a first round pick last year, their catcher, is now in the Boston Red Sox system. But they've also produced a ton of pitchers. I mean, Josh Spores, right? Josh Spores, who was just an absolute icon of the World Series last year. That is something we saw in college, right? When he did it in 2015, I believe. I believe he was a huge part of that 2015 World Series team. So they have produced a ton of pro players. What do we need to know about UVA this year?
So they have a bunch of good hitters, like you said.
Yeah.
A lot of them have very silly names.
Yeah, very, yes.
So I think that's important to understand. Their best hitter probably is a guy named Griff O'Farrell.
Yeah, definitely their best overall player. Yeah.
Best overall player is their shortstop. They have a guy who's going to be a top few round pick this year who's named Harrison Didowick. Like, if you're named Harrison Didowick, you either like fought at the Battle of Bunker Hill or you play baseball at UVA.
And
those are the two options for you.
If that's not good enough for you, allow me to introduce you to their two freshmen. I guess one of them is a sophomore. Two Henrys. Henry Godbout,
Godbout signed the Declaration of Independence. I have no doubt.
Godbout, who's rocking, 1,100 OPS with more walks and strikeouts. He's been fantastic lately. And then Henry Ford. You're probably familiar with his work. at least
making the car.
Making the car. But this year he's a freshman, with 17 home runs. So this lineup is outrageous. They also have some, there's even more than that. Guys that are get drafted, Ethan Anderson, Casey Sauke, Jacob Ferentz, their D3 transfer catcher, who we're a big fan of. But lineup is absurd. Now, how are they going to get enough outs on the mound? We're about to find out. We asked the same question last year and they made it to Omaha and they did ultimately kind of run out of pitching. But they are... It's pretty astonishing that they're able to get back here this consistently. Yeah.
This Henry Ford, a much bigger fan of the Jewish people, I believe. Which,
that's good to know. That's very.
I mean, that's hard. Not hard to beat.
The bar was rather low. Yeah.
Yeah. Last thing about them, Jay Wolfuck is a very cool story. So he's kind of an undersized pitcher for them, who was also the starting quarterback at UVA for a stint. Like, he was two sports all the way, doing both. And because of that, never fully reached his potential on the mound. It was like really scintillating stuff, high ride fastball from a shorter arm slot. And then he stopped playing football this past year to focus on pitching. And it was like fine. And then down the stretch, it just kind of clicked. And he started a game in the regional and was sensational. When you see him on TV, he's got a big afro under his hat. Like, he's super electric and athletic on the mound. very fun guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah, again, as you mentioned, just being a solid reliever the whole season and then delivering the two best starts of your life in the postseason is a pretty remarkable trajectory. But he is someone who was already on the draft radar, obviously a great athlete. But that's definitely a fun one to watch as far as their pitching staff. And as you mentioned, yeah, the only ACC team with a national championship, right? They have that champ. They have right. That is a real championship pedigree. They know how to do it. Their head coach Brian O'Connor has been there, done that. There, that is something that they have that no one else does. And a lot of these players were in Omaha last year, so there will be some comfort level there. And yeah, that's the Cavs.
So UVA will play UNC on that side of the bracket in the first game today at 2:00 Eastern, I believe. The other side of that, or the other teams in this side, Tennessee Volunteers and the Florida State Seminoles. Let's begin with Tennessee. They are the number one overall seed. They're not your typical number one overall seed. They're very, very good. They're not a consensus juggernaut in terms of, like, that's the best team in the country. You know, I think there are some people who would disagree with that. Some people would take Kentucky. Some people would take Texas A&M. But for the purposes of the conversation, they are trying to become the first number one overall seed to win it all since Miami in 1999. Now, Tennessee has been here quite a bit. They have won. They've been to Omaha three times in the last 4 years. The one time they did not make it to Omaha is probably the team you remember in 2022 when they were that juggernaut, when they were very fearsome, when they were a powerhouse, like a true knock your teeth in MF-er, right? And they got knocked off in the Super Regionals, didn't get here. There are a lot of pro guys on that team. Well, guess what? There are a lot of pro guys on this team as well. The Volunteers are led by the bad boy of college baseball, Tony Vitello. Their coach, you either love him or you hate him. And on this podcast, boy, do I love him. He is edgy. He is scratchy. He is fierce. He is passionate. And this team very much plays in his image.
Yeah. And, you know, just not that Tennessee didn't have a kind of a strong college baseball history with, of course, guys like Todd Helton, but they hadn't even been to the tournament, you know, since 2005 before Vitello showed up. And now they've made it every year since 2019. And of course, this is their third appearance in Omaha over the last four seasons. And that's pretty astonishing. And that he is. And by the way, again, we talk about the transfers, and they do have one very notable one in Billy Amick, their third baseman, a transfer from Clemson. However, the rest of this lineup, man, these are just straight up recruits. A lot of guys from nearby, a lot of guys from interesting places. This lineup is homegrown and they are ridiculously talented. It is the best offense in this field remaining. And while they have certainly benefited from playing in a rather small park at home in Lindsey Nelson, their numbers are outrageous and it is reflective of the talent. I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but five guys that could go in the top 100 picks, and their top starter, Drew Beam, could also be a top 100 pick. So just an outrageous amount of talent, and Tony V's, you know, intensity on field, post game, everything. Did you see his theory, by the way, about why the number one overall seeds haven't been winning?
No.
Do you miss this?
I miss this.
He said, well, he basically said at the presser yesterday, you know, no one's won since 1999 Miami. And he said 1999 was also when social media started and it's only gotten bigger. And he's like, I don't think that's a coincidence. Now, listen, his main point being that the more noise that kids on these teams have had to deal with over the years as the number one seed, it has become harder to drown that out and, you know, block it out. Now, again, it's not an excuse for it. Yeah. However, it was like, this is a good Tony V theory. Again, anyone who's seen him kind of go on these monologues in recent years,
great.
He is very, very entertaining.
Who could forget when TikTok knocked off Wake Forest in the College World Series last year?
That's what I remember. I'm pretty sure that's who beat them, right?
I think that's what happened. Yep. My favorite player on this team is Blake Burke. Mm-hmm. Blake Burke, I'm going to do my best to describe Blake Burke to you, okay? He is built like Pete Alonso, maybe a little bit taller.
Yeah, taller. Pete Alonso. Yeah, he's taller, yeah.
Not as wide, but he's like your thick first baseman, and he already has a goatee.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And he had it, I'm pretty sure as a freshman. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he swings closer to Ken Griffey Jr. than anybody I have ever seen. Now, I'm not saying he is that good. I'm not saying he is going to be the face of a baseball generation. I'm saying from a visual mechanical standpoint, this gentleman, Blake Burke on Tennessee, has a very similar move to Ken Griffey Jr. Now, it's gotten a little bit less similar. used to do kind of a one-handed Griffey finish. Now it's more of a two-handed finish. But when you see it, it's like, what the heck? That's bizarre.
When he connects, right, on a pulled fly ball homer and drops the bat, like, it's like, whoa, what was that? That was something. Yeah, and the thing with him is just he got so much better this year. He cut his strikeouts by a ton. The power has always been there. He had prodigious power as a high schooler. He's shown that at Tennessee, but he has become a better overall player, better defensive first baseman, better overall hitter, and that has allowed his draft stock to definitely rise this year as well.
A ton of other prospects on this team.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, Billy Amick, Drew Beam, Kavars Tears, Christian Moore could be a first-round pick.
Yep.
We're going to pocket all those
yep.
and keep this thing moving forward. Tennessee is also looking for their first ever national championship. This is their third Omaha appearance the last 4 years, like you mentioned. Number one overall seed. They're going to have a ton of fans here. They're a great, great, great watch. If there's any team I'd be like, tune in for them,
yes.
specifically, it yep. would be Tennessee. Yep. They will take on the Florida State Seminoles. And this is part of why I would recommend watching. Florida State has the best pitcher left in the field, at least in my opinion. Jamie Arnold, who is a sophomore, he will not be eligible for the draft until next year. He is a likely first-round pick next season. Very loose left-hander, kind of a shorter guy. Met him yesterday. Delightful. He lost his phone. You helped him find it. Just out here doing the Lord's work.
You helped someone else find their phone.
Yeah, I'm back.
How about that? Okay, like yeah, that. Jake was like, hey, man, I lost my phone all the time.
Been there. Done this.
I got you, bro. Don't worry. Don't panic. Everything's going to be okay.
Easy. I know where the lost phones are.
Jamie Arnold feel good.
One day, Jamie Arnold will find my phone when he's like on the Brewers or something.
When he's in the big leagues and you see him be like, hey, Jamie. Jamie's going to be like, oh, hey, Jake, you left your phone in the dugout pregame. That's going to happen.
Oh, thanks, man. So that's going to be tonight, I believe. The Friday night game.
Yeah.
Jamie Arnold, best pitcher of the field against Tennessee.
Yeah,
best offense in the field. That is like the set the alarm if you're a hardo like us. I cannot wait to be in the building for that. I might try and sneak down behind home plate like I did a couple years ago with Cade Horton to watch that start. But Florida State, they have a fascinating narrative arc. Okay, I'm going to do my best to describe this to you as brief as possible. Florida State has never won a national championship. They have been to Omaha 24 times. They are
statistically impossible to believe.
They technically are over 23 because this is their 24th.
Oh, only over 23. Okay, sorry.
That does not make mathematical sense, right?
No, like, yeah. And it's more than just that, right? Right. I mean, I guess that's kind of jumping ahead. But they had made the tournament 44 years in a row. Okay.
Correct.
Now, and as you mentioned,
the longest streak.
Yeah.
Longest streak in college baseball. Not only had they made the tournament 44 years in a row, okay, they had been over 500 for every year of the program's history. The only program in the country to do that. Their first year as being a program was 1948. From 1948 until 2023, they were over 500 until 2022, I guess, technically. For a lot of that stretch, I believe from the late 70s, early 80s until 2019, they were led by a gentleman named Mike Martin. Legendary coach, clearly never got his ring, took them to Omaha a number of times, built a sustainable, respected program. Mike Martin retires in 2019, and he hands off the reins to Mike Martin Jr., who, yes, is his kid.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, not a coincidence, okay? However, Mike Martin Jr. does not do a good job. Even though he makes the postseason in both of his years, okay? Or I guess 2020 didn't count, but he makes the postseason in 2021, and I guess 2022, keeps that streak going. There's clearly something not right with the program. He is let go, and they replace him with a gentleman by the name of Link Jarrett, L-I-N-K, Young Link. Okay,
yeah, Young Link.
Link Jarrett from Tallahassee, played at Florida State, loves the program. And in his first season last year in 2023, they sucked. They were awful. They finished under 500 for the first time ever. They didn't make the tournament, and everyone was like, what the heck is going on? Fast forward to this year, Mike Martin passes away in February. And they have a phenomenal, phenomenal season. One of the best teams in the country, ranked 10th overall. Very clearly, like, back. Like, Florida State this season was back on the map. They look like they're going to be a powerhouse for years to come under Link Jarrett. And this would be a very narratively rich time for them to win their first national championship.
Yeah, and it's really wild to see 23 College World Series appearances. They only finished runner-up three times, most recently in 1999. And they had been to the College World Series six times since then. So it's just unreal to get there that often and to have the talent to get there that often. Because while, yeah, it's not, I mean, to some degree, again, the same thing as the Major League Baseball postseason to some degree, where it's like, in theory, man, just get in, get to Omaha, and anything can happen, right?
Even the Dodgers won.
Right. Right. Even the Dodgers found a way, right, to win.
Yeah.
But the point is like, so there's clearly some randomness here, but 23 without winning is wild. And the thing to know here is, and then we'll take a quick break and then we'll get to the other four teams, is the talent is there, man. I mean, this is a bad, and you mentioned Arnold, but they've got two first round picks on offense, James Tibbs and Cam Smith. James Tibbs could be a top 10 pick, Cam Smith 10 to 20. James Tibbs had three home runs in a super regional game. He is one of the best hitters in the country. Yep.
James Tibbs the third.
James Tibbs the third. Yes. He
he approved the nickname yesterday. Yep. Jimmy Three Sticks. I asked, can we call you Jimmy Three Sticks? He said, yes, you can.
He said, yes, sir. So thank you for that permission from Mr. Tibbs, but he is amazing.
Oh, sorry. Certainly. This was a great moment. Sorry, this is a great moment. Yeah. I'm not trying to talk about James Tibbs. Friend of the show, Stephen Schock, asked James Tibbs about the three, about the three sticks. He said, do I need to say the three sticks every time I mention your name, like on camera? Mm-hmm. And James Tibbs goes, you don't need to. It's totally fine. But that was just something I did for my father and grandfather. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, well yeah.
It's like, well, I mean, Is that available for any of us? Could I just throw, you know, five sticks at the back of my name for no reason?
Would it be five sticks, Jordan? It would be a V.
There you go. But I'm just saying, like, you're like, yes, we know that is what that means. It's not just a stylistic choice.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, dude, like, you didn't do it for your gardener and your hairdryer, you know? It was great. It was like, yeah, that's for my father and grandfather. It was like,
this is how I honor the guy that, you know, makes my BLT at the bodega.
Yeah. This is how I honor, you know, my little brother, also named James. Confusing. Anyway, James Tibbs III, Jimmy Three Sticks.
He's
really
awesome.
Exciting player.
What a good,
built like a tank. A great pop. Super fun to watch. And then Cam Smith, you mentioned, going to be a first round pick. Infielder, probably third baseman, maybe even a right fielder. Heard some whispers about that. Mm-hmm. Enormous, dude.
Yeah, he's like, there are some
really good college players. Like when you see them, you're like, oh, wow, you're kind of tiny. Like Ryan Walshman in Kentucky, I saw yesterday, shorter than I thought. I saw Cam Smith. I was like, you are a major leaguer who is 20 years old wearing a Florida State uniform. Like, what are you doing here?
Yes, yes. That is a good way to describe him. All right, Jake, let's take a quick break. When we return, we will run through the four other teams, Kentucky, NC State, Texas A&M, and Florida. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbers.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, two college graduates.
That's
Jordan,
us.
Here's a question. Where is your degree, your physical degree?
Good question. I actually am pretty sure mine is not currently with me. Although it's possible if Bailey's listening that she's like, yeah, dumbass, it's in the it's upstairs. But I will say, because she's like got her PhD, so hers is like this in this fancy thing, and like that's displayed and everything. That's nice. I don't have that. I got my bachelor's and I'm chilling, but I don't need to have it up.
I have mine with me. I never leave home without it. I travel with it. It's here with me in Omaha. I have it in my bag. I don't know what you're talking about.
Just to make sure, like, if everyone's like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, and you're like, oh yeah, check this out.
Check out my Islamic history degree. Very useful when I'm talking
qualified
about.
Qualified to talk about Anthony D'Onofrio. Let's move on.
Better believe it.
Let's move on to the other side of the bracket. And let's talk about Kentucky, Jake Mintz. By the way, I should mention, if you want to read even more, you know, concise words about all of these teams, Jake has that article in written form on Yahoo. So you can check that out. And I encourage you to do that.
Yeah, I spat.
Let's move on to Kentucky. This is the team I think I am most excited to watch. This is the only team making their debut in Omaha in this College World Series field, right?
Their MCWS debut.
Their MCWS debut. But they are the number two overall seed. This is no Cinderella. However, relatively, it sure feels that way. The Kentucky Wildcats are very, very, very fun to watch. And while they might not have quite the same star power, although some players, you mentioned Ryan Waldschmidt, has kind of played his way into that as one of the more productive players in the SEC, and I think will be a first-round pick, this is a little bit of a different style. And it's been working to a brilliant degree under head coach Nick Mingione.
There is a little 2022 Mariners or 2021 Mariners to them.
Yes.
That was the team with that weird run differential.
Oh, now, yeah. The fun differential.
The fun differential. They are 52nd in the country in OPS and 52nd in the country in ERA. If you look at the raw numbers compared to some of the other raw numbers from some of these
teams,
you're like, how are you winning all these games? And the reason is they're super good in close contests. Mm-hmm. And they, like, really, this is so corny, they believe in themselves. Yeah. And the number one thing I would like to convey to you, the beautiful listener, about Kentucky is that the in-dugout energy is exactly what you're thinking about when you think about college baseball antics. It is coordinated. It is bizarre. Okay? It is choreographed. They have, like, so many bits, shticks, and gamuts. Okay? This is a team where you could watch the dugout and be more entertained than the game. Although that would probably be confusing. They have someone on their roster who is, their role, their job, is dugout captain. Okay, there's a reserve player. I believe his name is Ryan Hagenow.
Oh, he's a pitcher. He's one of their older pitchers. He's one of their longest tenured players on the team. Yeah.
Yeah. So he is a dugout captain, and that means that he can kick anybody out of their dugout and make them go sit in the stands of the clubhouse if they're not bringing the requisite energy.
Okay? Mm, love that.
And that extends
love that accountability
to coaches. So if he wanted to, he has the authority within the team to kick the head coach out of the dugout. Now, he has never done it. He has given warnings to coaches, yellow cards.
That's one.
He has not. What do you say?
That's one. Yeah. Yeah. We got one warning for you. Yep.
He has given warnings this year, no ejections this season. But last year, he did make a player who had bad energy go sit in the stands behind home plate during a game. So Kentucky is very vibe focused.
They can't. Yeah. You can. It's not a joke. Like, they take that very seriously in that it is mandatory to be having a damn good time. And that is the energy you would expect for a program that had not been to the postseason in back-to-back years until these past 2 years. Like, this is how rare it is for them, but they've catapulted themselves all the way to the top of the SEC and now have kind of created. It's not like there aren't fans passionate about collegiate sports in Lexington, Kentucky. And so that energy that they had in the dugout has now been extended to the crowd in Lexington. And I'm excited to kind of see how their fans show up in Omaha this weekend. I don't know if you have kind of an early take on that, but that's going to be really cool to see those fans experience that for the first time.
All right, let's move on. They'll be facing the NC State Wolfpack, ranked 12th overall in the country. This is their fourth College World Series appearance. They were here most recently in 2021, and we'll talk about that in a second. They have never won the national championship. Okay, 2021, what happens? NC State is not very good. During the regular season in 2021, they make the playoffs, they get in, and they catch fire. They make it to Omaha as very clearly a Cinderella underdog. They win their first two games, knocking off Stanford and Vanderbilt. A gentleman by the name of Sam Highfill, friend of the show, he came up to me yesterday and says he loves our stuff, which
we love you too,
always
Sam.
Funny when we're around the big donkey, Stephen Schock here, and people come up to us, it's like, whoa.
Right. So no one has ever heard of Sesame Philly Barbecue, but they know Big Donkey 47, that's for sure.
Better believe it. So Sam Highfill outpitches, I believe it was Jack Leiter in Omaha to beat Vanderbilt, and NC State's up 2-0. And it's like, this team is amazing. And then what happens? Coronavirus.
Yeah. They caught fire and then they caught COVID.
So that everyone on the team gets COVID. Not everyone, because they play one of the most memorable games in college baseball history against Vanderbilt in, like, the rematch game, where they have 13 players that tested negative. Okay, so they end up having, like, a pitcher is playing first, and it's just a bunch of kids who've barely
played. Highfill was hitting.
The guy who had played the day before. I believe he got a hit in that game against Vandy. And it was like, this is unbelievable. They lose 3-1. Like, it was heroic. Okay. And it's like, all right, that was a bummer. Let's get it again tomorrow. More guys test positive, and the NCAA is like,
if we had to forfeit. Yeah. And that's it.
No mas.
It was very unfortunate. Now, again, it was, there are probably better ways it could be handled. Listen, this is June of 2021, right? This is we're peak pandemic. Like, there was no easy way for this to be handled for anybody. It is super unfortunate. We all obviously felt terrible for NCAA at the time. There was no great way to handle it. It was summer of 2021. So let's just remember that. Let's put some perspective on that. However, regardless of who's fault, whatever. Yeah.
Right. Like, that's not to me, in my mind, those kids trained all year, practiced all year for this thing, and they didn't get to have that opportunity, right? And I think that they did not get to see it through. And when you're doing any sport, there's this idea that you control what you can control. And they did that, and it still didn't really matter. Right now, yes, not to relitigate everything that went down, but like, there is very complicated. Go back and read about it. I think, in retrospect, the NCAA did do the right thing, but there's a lot of balls in the air. What you need to know is that Sam Heifel is still on this team, as are a handful of other pitchers.
Yeah. Not
don't
very
think there are any meaningful position players that are still around, but a lot of the coaching staff is still here.
Oh, of course.
And Heifel, who is the emotional leader of this team, is very much still around. And it is an open wound. Like, these guys don't want to think or talk about what happened in 2021. They just want to go out here and play well in 2024. But it is such an unavoidable shadow for us, because the last time we saw them here, this whole thing happened.
Yep. And then there's also 2022. They were one of the biggest snubs to not even get into the tournament. And so there's also some of that, you know, built up. But this year, they've just been kind of a little bit more up and down than some of these ACC teams, but certainly have gotten hot at the right time again. And very impressive, went into Athens and beat Georgia in the Super Regional last weekend. And now, you know, come into this Omaha field with a very balanced team. They've got a really good bullpen. They've got a first-round pick, likely in Jacob Cozart, their catcher. So definitely some interesting talent for them. But yeah, for them, it's really about what the program has been through and head coach Elliott Avent and all those things.
They also have the best bullpen here, I would say.
Yeah, it's deepest, definitely one of you know, two or three. Them and North Carolina.
Them and North Carolina. So, like, in this area of college baseball, if you have multiple people that you trust coming out of the bullpen, that is a luxury.
Whoa! Yeah, that's hard. I know. Yankees fans, I know this sounds wild, but there are a lot of teams that could use Clay Holmes.
Hilarious. All right,
I know
let's
he sucks,
move on.
But yeah, anyway, sorry.
The worst. Let's move on. Two more teams, Texas A&M Aggies. This is their eighth College World Series appearance. They also have never won it. They are ranked third overall in the country. They are a very fun team. They, on the offensive side, have three very likely first-round draft picks, one for each of the next 3 years. Brayden Montgomery is a top 10 pick this year. Unfortunately, he broke his ankle in the Super Regional. He will not be playing in Omaha. He'll still be a very, very high pick. Amazing, like, super athletic, great hitter, outfielder,
switch
rocket
hitter.
Arm, used to pitch, switch hitter in the Pro Bowl, switch hitter?
Yeah, we'll see. But he got a lot better from the right side this year. Yeah,
there will be a lot of shots of, like, a sad-looking, super athletic dude on the bench in, like, crutches and a t-shirt, and you'll be like, that's Brayden Montgomery. Yeah. He's going to be on the A's in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's Brayden Montgomery. 2025, they have a gentleman, unbelievable baseball name, Jace LaViolette. He is 6'6", and he can play center field. He could be the number one overall pick next year. Not saying he will be. Not saying he's a favorite. There is a path to that being the case.
Yep. Just outrageous power from the left side. And a guy that was kind of popping late as a senior high schooler in Texas. By the time it was the draft, I was like, we'll just go to college. And then he showed up last year. I was like, oh my God, why did we not pay? Like, I've heard from multiple teams that were like, why did we not pay this guy out of high school? This guy is ridiculous.
And then they have a 2026 kid for probably first round pick named Gavin Grahovic, who looks like he's 27.
Yeah, same with Cam Smith. It's like, how is this a college baseball player? He just
right. Your forearms belong at Marlins Park or whatever the hell. Right. His dad, by the way, D3 player at Chapman University.
Hell yeah. Oh, I had no idea. Thank you for that info.
So that trio, Grahovic, LaViolette, Montgomery, has really carried this team all season long. Mm-hmm. But they have a very deep offense with a lot of older transfers, including guys like Jackson Appel, who came from Penn, I believe. They have a guy named Ted Burton who transferred in from Michigan. They have a guy named Hayden Schott who transferred in from Columbia. So they got these, like, all these old smart guys coming in from these nerd schools to help Texas A&M win baseball games.
These amazing high-level recruits.
Yeah, it's a great balance between those two. On the mound, their best hurler is a kid named Ryan Prager. But this is a very good staff as a whole. And part of the reason for that is their pitching coach, friend of the show, Max Wiener. Jordan, please give people a taste of Max Wiener.
Max Wiener is essentially one of the biggest rising stars in coaching. And I'm not just saying that because he's nice to us. But I am also saying it because he's nice to us. But Max Wiener is a big part. Max Wiener is our age. Maybe a year older, I think. Maybe a year older. But he had kind of just shot through the coaching ranks. He was with a few different organizations. But most notably, before he went to Texas A&M to be the pitching coach, he was a huge part of building up the Mariners pitching apparatus. And so if you listen to Jerry Dipoto or Justin Hollander talk, or any of the Mariners pitchers, Bryce Miller in particular is someone, he had a huge part in his development. Max was a massive part in kind of instilling a lot of what goes on in the Mariners pitching development organization. There's a lot of other people involved. It's not all about Max, but that helped him kind of go back to the coaching lab, where it's like the SEC's calling and says, hey, we want you to come help. And hey, it's hard to deny, because Texas A&M was not a standout pitching staff, and now they're one of the best in the country.
And it's a super interesting path for him, because it was just pro ball, right? Like, he was just a pro level pitching development guy, and now he's in the dugout in baseball pants every day.
Doing mound visits. Yep.
Doing mound visits and stuff. He is I gotta say, that's a handsome young man. Is. And and member of the tribe.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And recently engaged, I believe. So congrats to Max. Max is awesome. And the Aggies are awesome. They have a lot of Chris Cortez is another arm that's probably going to, you know, throw 100 miles an hour in Omaha. That's definitely a name to know on their staff. Let's move on to Florida and wrap this up, Jake. The Gators. Let me do this one. Go for it. Let's wrap this up and do our rapid fire, good, bad, ugly. But we got to hear about the Gators.
Let's be very clear. Drake and Jordan have some anti-Gator bias. Yeah, we got to get that out there just a little bit. The reason for that is we believe this program is gluttonous. Okay, this is too much good stuff. This is Tumgus, the Florida Gators. Okay, they have 14 College World Series appearances, 10 College World Series appearances since 2010. Okay, so they've been here 10 of the last 14 seasons, yet they have only won once. That was in 2017. Shouts out to Brady Singer. Now, why do we have anti-Gator bias? Well, it's a bigger thing. I think within the SEC, which has some outstanding fan bases, we think that the Gators are a little bit more...
It's a little sleepier.
A little sleepier, a little nappier. It's kind of a lower energy thing. And in the SEC, that really kind of plays out. The Gators, in the regular season, finished one game above 500. One game. They were 28-27. Yet they got into the tournament because they had the number one strength of schedule in the country. If you finish under 500 in college baseball, you cannot be in the tournament. You are forbidden. You are persona non grata.
Ineligible.
If they had lost one more baseball game this year, they would be banished to a longer summer. Instead, they snuck into the tournament. I believe that that's not a good thing for the sport, because I think teams that win a lot of baseball games should be rewarded, even though I understand the SEC is very good, strength of schedule, blah, 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 blah. Just doesn't sit right with me. However, team is uber talented, like just a like unbelievable assortment of pro level players one day. And so they get to the postseason and they catch fire. And here they are. And they are led by the player you are most likely to be familiar with, and that is Jack Caglione.
Yes, Jack Caglione, a two-way player who got Tommy John right after his senior year of high school. And so his pitching was a little bit delayed, but he was always known for massive raw power from the left side. Since he came back from TJ, he has been both the most feared power hitter in college baseball and one of the most imposing left-handed pitchers. Doesn't throw a ton of strikes, and the velocity has kind of fluctuated, particularly down the stretch. However, he is still one of their best starting pitchers, and he is, I mean, in terms of just in batter's box presence, as horrifying as it gets in college baseball. And it is breathtaking raw power, some of the home runs that he has hit this year. Yes, the balls and bats are crazy juiced, whatever. I don't care. This guy would be hitting a ton of home runs in any environment, and he is very, very fun to watch swing the bat in it. But as for what is most important for their success, how he does on the mound might dictate even more how far Florida can go in this College World Series.
And he's going to start game two, game one, got it. I believe. Caglione also looks like Walter Jr. from Breaking Bad.
Yes. A fascinating competence, very, very true, and you will see it if you know who Walter Jr. is. I will say about Florida, they are kind of like Tennessee in that it is a great balance of, you know, they plug some holes with some high-level transfers like Colby Shelton, but this is a lot of homegrown guys. This is a lot of guys who were in Omaha. They were runner-up last year, guys like Ty Evans, Michael Robertson, obviously Cags, Brandon Neely, and then they have some very impressive freshman arms. So it's an interesting mix, certainly talented, and we'll see if they can continue to prove us wrong, because we did not necessarily think they deserve to be here, but they've definitely made us look a little silly so far.
That's for sure. All right, that's it. That's all the college baseball teams. Jordan, you want to do a pick?
Yeah, I think my pick before the tournament was A&M over Florida State. Because of the injuries, I think I'm going to switch to Florida State against A&M. A&M's also lost some guys on the mound. So I'm going to switch to Florida State over A&M is my pick now.
Nice. I picked Texas A&M to beat North Carolina. I believe, however, I'm rooting for Tennessee.
I'm rooting for Kentucky, for sure. Okay. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And those games begin. They've already begun. By the time you're listening to this, they've already begun. So turn on ESPN and enjoy some college baseball.
All right,
Jake. It's still Friday. Let's do the good, the bad, the ugly. And we can do this one pretty quickly. Let's begin with some good. Again, something good, something bad, something ugly from the recent baseball. Jake, do you want to start with you? Do you have anything good? I got something good.
Clayton Kershaw threw baseballs.
That is good. That's a good
Clayton Kershaw, you know him. I don't need to explain Clayton Kershaw to you. He got surgery for the first time in his career over the offseason. And the other day, I believe this was yesterday, via friend of the show, Jared Sandler, who is a Texas Rangers broadcaster, tweeted a video of Clayton Kershaw on the mound for a 3-inning sim game. And just to see Clayton Kershaw's herky-jerky motion on a baseball mound throwing to hitters was really lovely, because there was legitimate doubt whether or not he was going to play again, right? And he is. Like, he's definitely going to pitch in the big leagues again, and that's a delight. I, again, recommend everyone go read Andy McCullough's book. We had Andy on to talk about that book, about the Kershaw biography. It was lovely. But yeah, it's good. Clayton Kershaw on a baseball mound.
Good. Great pick. My good is Yordan Alvarez. I wrote a little bit about the MVP race earlier this week, which you could check out. I did pieces on MVP and Cy Young. And I did a little note about Yordan just being like, yeah, like, he's been good. He's got like a 96th percentile ex-WOBA, but like, it feels like it's been kind of an underwhelming season for Yordan, even though he's been good. But that's the standard he's set, right? Well, in June, Yordan is hitting .395, .469, .907 with 5 homers, 5 doubles, 5 walks, and 2 strikeouts. So while he did have a .792 through the end of OPS through the end of May, he has an .888 OPS now, just a couple weeks later. He is one of the greatest hitters I have ever seen, and he is very, 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 very good. Jake, what's your bet?
I wanted to just check in on the negative WAR leaderboard.
Yep.
Okay, now I know that's kind of lazy, just a sort and laugh, but I am going to do it. I had mentioned that Andrew Benintendi looked on pace for the lowest single season WAR of all time. However, I believe he has missed some time on the injured list.
But yeah, he did miss some time. I know, but to slow that pace.
He has been passed. Okay.
Oh.
Andrew Benintendi.
If amazing you know, you reference. Know.
If you know, you know. He is now at negative 1.6 WAR, but his teammate, Martin Maldonado, has jetted past him, and he is now at negative 1.7 wins above replacement on Fangraphs. Martin Maldonado, Ella Harris Montero is also at negative 1.6. Yeah. Oh, Benintendi at negative 1.6, and then Jose Abreu at negative 1.5. Really, 3 White Sox in the bottom 4, as far as I'm concerned. And it's a fascinating race to the bottom.
There
to
somewhere
keep
too. So, Jake, yeah, it's really amazing. It's really amazing what Martin Maldonado is doing. But I just hope that he is helping these White Sox pitchers, and I believe that he is. However,
do you know his WRC plus? Remember, WRC plus. It's like an overall, you know, metric, the total offensive production. 100 is league average. Anything above or below that, what do you think it is?
Is it one or is it in the negatives?
Negative 31.
All right. My bad this week is the mentions to the Yankees loss tweet yesterday. Normally, this would be a sorry for your mention segment, which we will bring back at some point. However, when the Yankees with the best record in baseball lose a very close game at the end when their closer Clay Holmes, who has only allowed earned runs in two appearances all season, they blew a game. It sucks. But blowing a game like that when you're on the verge of mopping the Royals on the road, it's unfortunate. It sucks. I'm not asking you to be happy. I'm not asking you to get into the Yankees replies and say, woo, go Yankees. However, the replies to this tweet were just beyond unhinged for a team that is clearly one of the best in baseball, with for a closer that is clearly still one of the best in baseball. And these were bad. However, they did make me laugh. So how bad were they really? But yeah, the 704 replies to this tweet are just it's an astonishing.
So,
it's just truly an amazing degree of lack of understanding of reality. However, I'm entertained. I just hope that, like, for their sake, man. Yeah. What do you think? Is this actually good? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, this is good. So okay. The reason this is good, I have come all the way around on Yankees fans. I'm very pro now because that energy and passion that fan base brings, I understand it is often stemming from or includes a level of irrationality attached to it. But that energy and passion is not matched in this sport. It's just not, right?
That's
like, and I would love for that to not be the case. I would love if we had 29 other fan bases that got this unhinged, but we don't. Like, the Yankees have more people and they do and say wilder things. And part of that is because all of the winning over the years has created an environment where the standard is higher. And that is the thing about this. Jordan, you do not appreciate greatness. For you to call this bad means that you are content with mediocrity.
You're right. You're right. Like, no, you're right. Shame on me.
Like Clay Holmes and his, you know, 1.80 ERA. That's what it means.
No, you're right. It's not good enough. No notes. I apologize for settling. Shame on me for
settling
for anything less than zero earned runs, you know, from Clay Holmes.
It's just a good memory that all closers are just NFL kickers. Like, you
that's a good way to put it.
Like them, and then when they mess up, you hate them. All right, go ahead, Jordan. Actually,
no,
let me go
you
first.
Do your ugly first. You do your ugly first.
Mascot families are hilarious. Someone tweeted out, or there was a clip from Bally Sports Midwest about how Fred Bird, the Cardinals mascot, has a son. Apparently, there was like a little miniature Fred Bird following Big Fred Bird around that I guess had not been seen before.
Fred Bird the
and
second.
I just like the idea of mascot families, right? Like, these mascots themselves are not enough. We need to, you know, show that the nuclear family is, you know, healthy in American society.
Well, right.
Which I don't like. I need one mascot to have kind of like a modern family, right? Like an unordinary family in some way.
Mm-hmm. Maybe an adopted mascot. Right.
Can we get a mascot that looks nothing like
some
the other mascot?
Maybe some. Yeah, no, right. Exactly. I agree. I honestly am kind of shocked that teams haven't gone farther in expanding their kind of mascot inventory. That's something that's kind of surprised me, but it's bound to happen. So I would say that it is definitely ugly. However, it does not particularly surprise me. Jake, my ugly this week is the tweet I'm putting in the document right now. It's possible you saw this, but I feel like it's pretty likely that you didn't. So why don't you take a look? This is a tweet from Marquise Grissom Jr. Marquise Grissom Jr. This is the theme of the episode, I guess, the son of former major leaguer Marquise Grissom.
Wow.
Marquise Grissom Jr. was a 13th round pick by the Nationals out of Georgia Tech a couple years ago. He is a very interesting relief prospect, having a fantastic season this year, a 1.42 ERA. He has been promoted to AA. He's got a fantastic changeup. Velocity's been solid. And, you know, he could be a big leaguer someday, right? But I am not sending you a tweet from him about his pitching. What did I just send you, Jake?
It says, 100 days of Chipotle in a row feel like Wilt. And there's a picture of Marquise Grissom Jr. holding up a 100 sign like Wilt did when he scored 100 points.
He has actually been tweeting about this for a while. If you scroll through his timeline, there's a point where he, April 10th, he tweeted, "I'm on day 41 of eating Chipotle daily. Might as well go 100, right?"
Might as well.
And he did it. I'm really proud of him. I guess I'm wondering, we like Chipotle. This isn't necessarily new. I've seen minor leaguers tweet things along these lines before. However, that's why he did this, because he's like, "Oh no. You think you, minor leaguer X, like Chipotle? You know, watch this."
Can we have him on Monday? I'm gonna reach out to Marquise Grissom.
No, we can't, but we can have him on soon. Because I have a feeling he's going to keep eating Chipotle. But either way,
you think we're getting 101?
He does follow us on Twitter, so we will reach out and we will see. Wow. We will ask some questions about this. So
wow,
that is my Ugla, and I think we can now say goodbye. Jake, this has been a wonderful episode. Thank you all for listening. There is a wonderful weekend of baseball ahead. Obviously, you will be in Omaha watching the College World Series. I will also be watching. There is some good Major League Baseball going on this weekend. Yankees and Red Sox are playing for the very first time this year. We'll see if the Red Sox can stay at 500 once again. The Phillies and Orioles are playing a very compelling matchup where we got Burns versus Wheeler on Sunday. That will be delightful. Suarez versus Bradish tonight. We got some interesting division matchups. Rangers, Mariners, Cardinals, Cubs, Royals, Dodgers is going to be fun. So some good Major League action. Obviously, you'll be locked in over there in Omaha. But yeah, good fun weekend ahead. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And one final note. Sorry if this is coming out of nowhere to you, Jake, because I should have mentioned this to you earlier. But shouts out to my lovely mother, Gila, who is underwent surgery this week, somewhat significant surgery, but she's doing good in road to recovery. We're not a lot of experience with this kind of thing in our family, but she's doing well. But if you're listening, Mom, in the hospital, we salute you. I love you, and I hope you are resting up and enjoying learning about NC State's bullpen, because my favorite thing about my mom, who listens to nearly every episode, is she always says, "Guys, too much baseball. We got to work in a little bit more."
Gila,
it's Baseball Barbacast. I love you dearly, but it is Baseball Barbacast. So shouts out to my mom. Thank you, Jake. Enjoy Omaha. Thank you, producer Andrew Hartz. This has been fun. On Monday, we'll be previewing the MLB Draft Combine. We'll be heading to Arizona soon. And we hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. And we will talk to you very soon. Goodbye.